From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here once again with...
Just Jamie.
And today's a very special day. It is the 25th anniversary of a small, somewhat successful movie called Toy Story. So, in the spirit of the anniversary of Toy Story, which is, of course, the first full-length computer-animated feature, we'll be breaking down a bit of the journey, technologically speaking, that got us to Toy Story, and then sharing some of our favorite fully CGI films later on. So with that said, Jamie, let's talk CGI.
So I went through and I put together a very thorough list of the history of CGI animation in film, leading up to the point where creators, filmmakers, felt that it was possible to put CGI on the screen from beginning to end. Now, it's way too thorough to go through over the course of a podcast, and it gets really deep into the minutiae of so-called firsts. First time they used CGI to make a skin texture, for instance, which happens to be Death Becomes Her, 1992, by the way.
Oh.
So there's a lot of stuff. I mean, most of this stuff started way back in the 60s. These things weren't really appearing in feature Hollywood films. These were just the first attempts to create animation within the hardware computers at that time being giant apparatuses that fill an entire room. And most of these were just animated wireframes. In the 70s, you started to see raster graphics, and that became more of an industry standard for a long time. You would see raster graphics in a movie like Westworld when you see through the android gunslinger's eyes. You'd see wireframes in the trench sequence, the animatic for the trench sequence in Star Wars. You saw it in The Black Hole, in Alien. And most of the time, the computer graphics you'd see in movies of that era were something that you and the characters on screen were looking at. So it wasn't meant to represent something in the real world. It was meant to represent something that they were seeing the same as you, on a screen or on a display of some kind. In the case of Westworld being a little bit different, because that was a first-person perspective of the robot. And again, I don't really want to go through the whole list because there's so many. I mean, the big ones that people usually think about are something like Tron, which was, it's considered the first extensive use of 3D CGI for the light cycles and the facial animations for the Master Control Program. But actually, the movie only has 15 minutes of fully computer-rated imagery, computer-animated imagery, that is. And a lot of that is still animated over the top of traditionally painted matte sequences. And a lot of the effects in Tron are traditional optic effects. So Tron is meant to look like a computer for very long and large swaths of the film, but the CGI used is not quite as extensive as the visuals would have you believe. Let's see, some other important points. The Genesis effect in Star Wars II, The Wrath of Khan, is pretty effective because that goes beyond wireframes and beyond cartoony-looking things to something that almost resembles photorealism. And that was way back in 1982. But even then, most of the computer animation we see all through the 80s still looks very much like computer animation. It's very identifiable as something that was done on a computer. The Last Starfighter is another one that uses CGI for all the spaceship shots. And that was really the first movie that used CGI where the effects are supposed to represent real-world objects. And The Last Starfighter is a fun movie, but they don't look real.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of... You get a lot of sort of talking points along the way here. Another one that everybody that you always hear quoted is the TV show Young Sherlock Holmes in 1985. Lucasfilm created the first photorealistic CGI character, the Stained Glass Knight, which is a stained glass painting that comes to life.
Oh, right.
And That is on screen for an entire 10 seconds. But that's always an important one because it was kind of something resembling the human form.
Right. Well, it seems to me a lot of this stuff probably falls into the category of things that were impressive at the time but haven't really aged that well. I mean, you know, this is kind of the story of movie effects.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times over the course of a lot of the examples that I've given you, the filmmakers were at least forward-thinking enough to not think that the thing they were putting on screen actually looked real.
Right.
That's why, like I said, a lot of these effects were used for computer displays and holographic displays or background texturing or things like that. Or they didn't put it in front of you for the entire length of the movie because, well, they couldn't. I mean, that was cost restrictive. But I think a lot of times some of it ages okay because it's a background element or an otherwise not central theme.
Yeah, it's sort of assisted by the context and things like that.
Yep. 1988, the movie Willow was the first extensive photorealistic use of morphing.
Hell yeah.
In a feature film, in the famous scene where Willow can't quite get Finn Rizzell back to her human form. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade from 1989, not a movie anybody thinks of with extensive computer graphics, but it was the first time they used that an all-digital composite was put together. So basically they just used a computer to layer the optics. So that's an interesting step in a way that actually... That, I mean, not only does that sort of bode for the future of George Lucas making movies, but also that's a big look at things to come in the way computers are heavily used these days. And that's a point I'll get to later. So we get into the 90s. We start seeing computer animation a lot more. Again, a lot of backgrounds, matte paintings done digitally. But then you get to 1991, and you have Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And this is the first realistic human movement captured on a CGI character. It's also the first partially computer-generated main character and the first blockbuster movie to feature multiple morphing effects. And it's also the first movie to use a personal computer to create some of these things. So pretty much everything before this was specially made hardware. And finally, in 1991, they were able to use something that you could essentially buy off the shelf, although it was heavily... souped up, so to speak.
Right.
1992 is The Lawnmower Man, which of course has, you know, a lot of cyberspace effects, and that's kind of the next step from Tron, where they didn't cheat. They literally CGI to make all those animations, but if you're asking me which one's better, I'm going Tron all the way. 1993, we come to a big one, maybe one of the most seminal moments in CGI in movies, and one we've talked about many times in the past, and that's the film Jurassic Park. It's the first photorealistic CG creatures, but that doesn't really tell the tale, because now, I'm not saying some of those effects haven't aged a little bit. The Brachiosaur at the beginning of the movie is the one that's probably aged the worst, because the creature is so big that you can see that the texture is not quite as detailed as it should be.
Yeah.
But everything else, namely, of course, the Tyrannosaurus, still looks absolutely flawless. I see no age on the effects of the T-Rex at all when I watch it now. It looks like it's really in the physical space. The movement looks good. The skin, the muscles, the how it interacts with the real world that appears on camera. The CG Tyrannosaurus was a huge step, because even computer effects that you would have considered impressive just the year before still looked like The Lawnmower Man. You know,
right.
Like that's a huge, huge step. And I think that's when people realized what you could really try to do with computer effects, but it's also created a lot of failures because everybody expected those results and seldom achieved it. Then we start seeing a lot more stuff on TV, things like Babylon 5, VeggieTales, Reboot is a big one. The first half-hour computer animated TV series that debuts in 1994. Of all things, the Flintstones film from 94 was the first movie to use CGI rendered fur.
Hmm.
Because it's not even it's like their second pet, the saber-toothed cat has CGI fur.
Right. Wow.
The Crow was the first deceased actor to be recreated through CGI, so that's something that you'd probably have your finger on the pulse of as a big Crow fan.
Naturally.
Waterworld, the first realistic CG water in 1995. Casper, the first CGI lead character in a feature-length live-action film. and the first CGI characters to interact realistically with live actors. And then we get to the aforementioned Toy Story, which is the first CGI feature-length animation. So it's the first time a movie maker used CGI to create their film from the ground up and from beginning to end. And that's where things really take a turn, because, of course, computer effects do not disappear from film. I could continue to go on through this list, but I think we all understand the important points. So CGI is still used in live action all the time, but then starting with Toy Story, the movie-making timeline, so to speak, branched off into the CG movie-making realm. And that's almost all we see now. Almost any feature-length animated film is going to be CGI nowadays. Early on, Disney specifically was still doing some CGI films and some traditionally animated films. But they've basically left that entirely behind in favor of CGI films. And once that starts in 1995, there was really no stopping the ball from continuing to roll. The first few were Toy Story, which was released on this day, 1995, of course. Cassiopeia was a Brazilian film that came out the next year. Ants and A Bug Life both came out in 1998. Those were, of course, the battling ant movies from DreamWorks and Pixar.
Right.
Toy Story 2 came out in 99, so that was like right on top of that. That was even the second Toy Story is in that sort of initial phase of CGI films. A couple of years later, Dinosaur came out from Walt Disney. That's the first 5 years, basically, those films I just mentioned. And from there, of course, we all know it's just been one after another of CGI animated movies, and one after another that is hugely successful. The Shreks of the world, and the Finding Nemos of the world, and the Big Hero 6s, and the Wall-Es, and the list goes on. We all know them. They still exist within a separate category of film, but with something like Avatar, I think we're going to start seeing more of that sort of thing, although I could be wrong there, because we haven't seen that many. When you think of a thing like Avatar, that didn't exactly inspire huge numbers of imitators, because that was a huge expense to do it the way they did it. So maybe we're not actually ripe for the world of computer animation being used to create films that are in a separate category from, quote, cartoons.
Right. It kind of seems like maybe only the people behind Avatar are still really interested in pursuing things of that scope. It's been over a decade now since that movie, and they insist that they're still plugging away on not one, but I think they're doing 5 sequels, something like that.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
But something like Ready Player One is probably a better example of the kind of integration we'll see before anybody else really dives that deep into the pool.
That's a good example. Another one that came to mind for me was that Christmas Carol movie that Robert Zemeckis did. But again, that was done under the same, it's kind of in the same genre as his Polar Express movie, where it's somewhat photorealistic, but the humans don't really look like humans. It's still a cartoon because the reality of the world is still exaggerated.
Yeah, it's almost like a weird painting come to life.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And then the last note I wanted to mention before we get into another part of this conversation was that, you know, a lot of times CGI is, first of all, maligned unnecessarily because some filmmakers overdo it or individual films overdo it. And sometimes those movies are fun. I like plenty of movies that have way too much CGI in them and they're just ridiculous and overcooked and visually very busy and too much going on. Some of those movies are fun and enjoyable and some of them aren't. I would say that what you see now, though, aside from the movies you imagine in your head when somebody says movies featuring CGI, you picture a certain kind of film, but there's a lot of other things happening with CGI now. First of all, it tends to be more realistic, but you don't spot it because it's heavily used now in backgrounds, even in non-special effects movies. You could be filming a romance film on a ranch in Montana, and if the horizon doesn't look quite right or they'd like there to be a distant mountain where there's not one, they'll just pop it in. So CGI is also heavily used to make these smaller adjustments that you don't even think of as a special effect. At least you don't instinctually think of them that way.
Yeah, it kind of seems like filmmakers at this point basically have the option to go in and manipulate real life.
Yeah, actually, one of the best examples of that is the show The Mandalorian. something that I know we here at Nerd Bomber all very much enjoyed. A lot of the background rendering for that was done in the Unity engine. And, you know, now that we know a little bit about how the show is produced, I mean, Jon Favreau, who was the showrunner, could go in, you know, put on the headset and make changes in real time to the backgrounds and the buildings and the special effects right there on set. They didn't have to do it in post-production 6 months later. That's going to be something that I think is going to become much more heavily utilized by filmmakers working with any kind of budget, whether large or small.
Yeah, I think you're right. It definitely seems like another potentially game-changing step forward, for sure.
I mean, I think that brings me to the end of the sort of the history, the incredibly annotated history of CGI in film, and a couple of my random notes. I know you wanted to talk about maybe what some of our favorite CGI CG animated films were, if you want to jump into that.
Yeah, what I thought would be enjoyable to do on this episode is to have each of us pick the fully CGI or computer animated movies that we like best and present them in two categories. The first being family-oriented or kid-friendly, as that is the category that kind of really took off with Toy Story and has continued to dominate ever since. And the second category being, I guess, a hybrid between general audiences and or adult, just having more mass appeal to all ages. I elect myself to start first, if there are no objections.
Please proceed.
Okay, then. My first pick is probably my overall favorite fully computer animated film of all time. And I'm going to hit you with it right out of the gate. From 2004, it is The Incredibles.
On November 5th, the creators of Finding Nemo reveal a side of superheroes you've never seen before.
Mommy, dinner! Maybe just a salad!
Disney presents a Pixar film, The Incredibles, rated PG.
Uh-huh.
I feel like it's still to this day not only one of the most impressive and satisfying computer animated movies, but probably movies in general in terms of the overall experience and the balance of elements in the story it tells. I still feel really entertained and really good when I watch it.
It's very good. Like you said, there's a lot going on with the plot, but it gets through everything very efficiently in under 2 hours. It deserves its place in the pantheon of superhero movies as well, and is often overlooked. And yes, this was a movie that was on my list of possibilities. I do have extras just in case. I'm sure that comes as no surprise. It has a lot going for it. For a long time, it was probably my very favorite CGI movie ever made. I think there's a couple of things on my list that are competing with it at this point, but it was definitely one of the first things that came to mind for me.
Yeah, I think something else about it that maybe gets overlooked because it's a little bit built in is I feel like it flawlessly balances kind of a loving parody of all the classic superhero tropes and elements and stereotypes with completely original characters that still function as actual superheroes in their own right. It's almost a little bit meta and pretty self-referential in a lot of ways. And anything that does that well is always pretty impressive to me.
It also maintains a good timelessness. Ostensibly, it's set in sort of an alternate version of the 60s, kind of the way a futurist of the 60s would imagine the future almost. But I think it kind of maintains something that's independent of a period of time, and that's also to its benefit.
Yeah. Any kind of action or fantasy or superhero genre, you could probably find something that is referenced or nodded to in this movie. Even, you know, a lot of the, like you said, the 60s, there's a lot of subtle James Bond type references in there too, with the villain Lair and, you know, a lot of the way that the kind of villain carries themselves and the things that they puts the heroes through. And I think the animation still holds up really well too today.
Agreed. 100%.
And I also liked how it's very humorous. It's very action-oriented and fantasy-based, but it also accurately depicts real-world problems.
Yep, it's a closest analog for it would be something like Fantastic Four. But yeah, The Incredibles very successfully takes bits and pieces from well, a lot of different superhero iconography. It takes a lot of that stuff and sprinkles it in. But yeah, it very much tells its own story. It has its own plot while still satirizing and paying homage to, in a loving way, the superhero genre. And that is a tough thing to do, to manage to do all those things in a satirical but still loving way and maintain your own identity. This is a weird parallel to draw, but in those ways right there, 1, 2, 3, it reminds me of the movie Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have nothing but good things to say about the movie. Like I said, it was on my list.
I will say that I think the sequel falls into the a little bit into the too little too late category for me. I don't think it's a bad
it took
movie,
so long.
But I just I'll still pick the first one over it any day.
100%. Yep, agreed.
Well, that is my family-friendly pick. What do you got, sir?
Okay, so I had trouble with these categories, family-friendly versus general audience, but I'm gonna bank on the fact that you're going to mention one of these, so I'm going to skip that one for now. And I'm going to go to the general audiences category and go to 2007 Imagi Animation Studios, TMNT.
Leonardo, I'm sensing a great threat. We need to be a family once again.
On March 23rd.
Within hours, we'll lose the city to monsters.
I have to disagree with you on that one.
Four brothers will unite as one. Woo-hoo! Leonardo, Raphael, Donatello, Michelangelo.
Yeah!
TMNT.
Got any moves left?
Use this one!
Rated PG in theaters March 23rd.
Uh-huh. I hadn't even considered that. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm always kind of a defender. I don't know if I have to defend her. It's not widely maligned or anything. But I do often bring this movie up as an overlooked gem in the animated movie genre and in the Turtles pantheon of media. You could look at it as a direct sequel to the very first movie if you wanted to. Like with The Incredibles, obviously I wouldn't put it on my list if I had a lot of nitpicky criticizing things to say about it. I think it's great. I think it has a good cast. And yeah, I think it's a little bit overlooked. The other stuff on my list, all of it's been pretty much blockbuster stuff that is not obscure. This one's a little bit obscure, and I didn't pick it just to be sort of like, you know, the guy who likes the thing that other people don't like, but I did want to just shine a light on something that I think is a little bit underappreciated.
Yeah, that's an excellent pick. I don't know how I didn't even consider that, especially because there's a dearth of movies that fit this kind of category, really. But this is perfectly,
exactly.
this does it perfectly, maybe better than anything I could have even come up with. So, yeah, and it's also very underrated and, not underrated probably by the fans, but maybe the society at large. It does a great job of everything that you look for.
Yep, I think it's... its budget was only $34 million, and it made just under $100 million. So, like, it made money, but most of these other movies we're going to talk about were all $300, $400, $500, $600 million blockbusters. So this just did not get that kind of cultural saturation that some of these other things, something like The Incredibles, did. So I think in that sense it's overlooked, but I don't think – most people who see it are not going to say it's bad. I think – well, some people might go there automatically because they want to hate anything that's not exactly what they remember from their childhood. But I think this is a worthy follow-up to something like that. It's like, yes, the Turtles look a little bit different, but I think that it's well pulled off and in the spirit of the movies, which, of course, were this amazing hybrid of the seriousness of the original Ninja Turtles comic book and the absolute over-the-top silliness of the original animated series. A hard thing to balance. The first movie especially does that extraordinarily well. It's a great, great movie. And I think this one also succeeds. I mean, if you're asking me to pick which one's my favorite, I'm picking the live-action film every time. But right. This movie is a worthy successor.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly.
All right, so back to you, I suppose.
All right, well, I went, as is my way on the show, I suppose I sort of played fast and loose with the rules and being my own rules at this time. But it falls into the category of a fully computer animated film. And it is, it's not necessarily general audiences. It's definitely leaning more towards adult. So I went all the way back to 99 in the first phase that you mentioned earlier of the initial gold rush of CGI movies. And I went with South Park, bigger, longer, uncut.
They were four friends.
Dude, is it Cartman's mom?
Oh, very funny.
It is Cartman's mom.
Yay!
But when the forces of darkness threatened their world,
I'm Satan.
Okay.
They had to embark on the greatest adventure of their lives.
Where did they come up with this stuff?
On June 30th, it's not just another day in the park. South Park, bigger, longer, and uncut.
We accidentally replaced your heart with a baked potato. You have about 3 seconds to live.
What?
Rated R. Starts June 30th. Only in theaters.
Oh, you saw that coming, huh?
As soon as you said 1999, I knew what you were going to say.
Yeah, it's a bit, I mean, you look at it and you don't think, you know, it doesn't look like the 3D, the computer animation that we're used to, that was established by Toy Story. But it's, my research tells me from the official South Park website that only the pilot episode of South Park was traditionally animated using actual construction paper. And once they did that, they scanned all of the construction paper to get the textures and the library of shapes. And basically from episode 2 forward until today has all been animated on computer using a program called Maya.
Well, I mean, they've definitely stuck to it because, you know, I'm not going to have much to contribute. I understand kind of what South Park is. I know that it makes criticisms of society that I'm sure that I would like and agree with, but I've never jumped in. And I never saw Bigger, Longer, and Uncut either. So maybe I'm a little bit of a heretic in that way. But, yeah, I've never got on board with it.
I think the timing is right for you in that sense that if you were to see it now, I think current Jamie, today's Jamie, would be able to truly appreciate it much more than perhaps 1999 Jamie. Just because it's such
I was just too dumb.
No, it's just such a. And
I know.
I wish I'd waited. Honestly, it's just such an ambitious musical and like multi-layered parody and commentary on their own critics and things like that. And you know, it's done through their super extreme, super abrasive style. But I think this movie set the stage for Trey Parker and Matt Stone to blossom further into things like their super successful Broadway show, The Book of Mormon. And, you know, you could see the lineage kind of start here.
It's interesting to think that it's 21 years old now. And even by then, they were already sort of answering to their critics and making these, you know, satirizing society in this way. So, like you said, so much more abrasively than most other media would have been even given a chance to do. It's amazing they even had a chance to do it.
Right, yeah, that was a Paramount Pictures feature film, and that was 2 years into the existence of the show.
That's kind of incredible.
It really is. And that it's still on today.
Yeah, another thing that's easy to overlook that they're still going on there. By the way, they still have plenty of material because nobody seems to be learning from the lessons of the past, so.
Right. Yeah, they'll keep stuff like that in business basically forever.
Absolutely.
All right, back to you, sir.
All right, you've put me in a tough spot because I thought for sure you were going to pick one of my two remainders.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just going to say screw it and break the rules and mention them both.
All right.
So the one that I thought you for sure were going to pick that I skipped on purpose, because I also had The Incredibles on the list. You picked that, good. I did my TMT. I had two more choices. This one I thought for sure you were going to say, and that's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse from 2018.
My name's Miles Morales. Yeah, I'm the new Spider-Man.
Can you swing with the grace of a trained dancer? Can you be disciplined?
Can you float through the air when you smell a delicious pie?
What? Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Tickets on sale now.
I did consider it.
Yeah. Produced by Columbia, Sony, and Marvel. So we waxed poetic about this movie not long ago because it's only 2 years old at this point. It's great. It's a mix of styles that resemble different kinds of animation, but mostly all done in computers or computer-assisted. There are hand-drawn sections, I guess, but still computer-assisted animation. So I think it still counts.
Right.
So, of course, I'm sure we could each go on and on about how great it is. Hopefully we'll get the sequel within a reasonable amount of time. I know it's kind of in some point of production with the pandemic of 2020 kind of slowing everything down. who knows when we'll see it, but I wanted to mention it because I thought for sure you were going to.
I actually was. That was going to be my pick before I remembered that South Park is technically computer animated. So
right.
I thought nobody would see that coming, so I had to go with that one. But yeah,
you're right about that.
Into the Spider-Verse is undeniable in this category, and you know, in animation in general. Yeah, I mean, it's an Oscar winner for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's weird. I feel weird. I felt weird even when we talked about this on the show initially, almost being so complimentary of it to such an extreme extent, because there are elements of it that kind of annoy me, and that it takes real risks and departures stylistically in a lot of ways, and especially from the ways that some of these characters have always appeared. But I think the fact that those things ultimately are inconsequential in the face of the whole project being so good speaks to its quality, because very rarely is a movie good enough to make me overlook my nitpicks. And this one,
that's a good point.
It's just so well done.
Yeah, yeah. I was enthralled when I saw it for the first time, and I rewatched it. You know, there's always that little danger that maybe the second time around it won't be as effective, but I didn't have that sophomore slump, so I was happy to see that it still held up on second viewing and hopefully will, you know, continue to have a place in my rotation long term.
Right.
Well, the fourth thing on my list, this was the thing that I was going to talk about because you for sure were going to mention Spider-Verse, and that's a Warner Animation Group 2014, the Lego movie. This, again, kind of similar to the Spider-Verse, where it was something where, on its face, it just seemed like something that was going to be a ridiculous, it was product placement. It's a movie made about a toy line, not even a character's, like something like, you know, the He-Man or something. It was just, here's a bunch of toys we're going to make a movie out of. It just seemed like a shameless cash grab, and in some ways I'm sure it was. But the creative juice that went into making it, the things they did with the story, with the characters, with this sort of irreverence that they had, the tongue-in-cheek nature of it, the fourth wall breaking, it just was all really, really, I mean, I don't want to throw around the word genius, but I mean, I was extremely impressed the first time I saw it, and it's still a great watch. And the sequel is also very good, kind of like The Incredibles. Well, no, I would say the sequel to this movie was more enjoyable to me than the sequel for The Incredibles was, but, you know, they also didn't make me wait 10 plus years, so. But yeah, I mean, so this would have been the thing that I mentioned after you talked about Spider-Verse, but you didn't. So I'm mentioning it here as well.
I feel about the Lego movie kind of the way you felt about the South Park. I have basically avoided, not that you've avoided South Park, but I've avoided Lego, and I just have no experience with it, like Lego animated projects kind of entirely. When it came out and it was getting all the praise that it got, I had a coworker who was super into it, who I could not stand as a human being. So I associated this movie. I mean, he just wouldn't shut up about it. So it just turned me off initially. And I just, yeah, I kind of viewed it also as a little too, I don't know, a little too gimmicky, a little too product placement-y, like you said. And those versions of the characters were maybe a bridge too far for me. However, much like I said for you in South Park, I think maybe today's version of Claude could appreciate it a bit more.
The Lego movie, the sequel, and the Batman Lego movie, I think are all excellent. There's another one called Ninjago that I'm not into because I don't care about that line of toys, and there was a cartoon for that from before the movie, and I don't care about that either. Now, Lego does produce a lot of made-for-TV stuff, too. It's a different software animation. It's less textured. It's much cheaper. It's not as good. So, unfortunately, they do dilute their franchise with all of the made-for-TV stuff, but the theatrical release stuff has all been, at least the stuff that I've seen, 3 out of 4, have all been excellent. So I would recommend them to anybody who's a fan of pop culture in general, because they're also, like, you know, they're very referential to wide berths of pop culture, because that's part of what Lego is. It's all licensed products these days anyway. But they take advantage of that for the movies, and they do it, and it doesn't feel too heavy-handed, and it doesn't get away of usually there's, you know, the Lego movie usually has a story to tell. They have a narrative, they have a plot they want to get through. They sprinkle in all this referential stuff, but to me, it doesn't get too far off the rails. It doesn't take away from the story itself. So, I think it's great.
Well, you heard it here. and I guess I have some homework to do.
You gotta watch South Park too.
All right. Arms have been twisted, and unfortunately, they don't pop back in the sockets for us as they do for the Lego people. But until they do, I've been your friend Claude.
And I've been just Jamie.
And we will see you on the next Nerd Bomber podcast.
Later. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team.
Everything is awesome when we live in our dreams. The Nerd Bomber podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WHAM Network. Everything is